Yo, what's up, guys? We're back, finally. UFC 249, going to be doing this full card breakdown and predictions video. Going to be getting it out nice and early, just because I've been really pumped. I've been going over these fights. I've already done, all my work on the fights. I'm going to keep monitoring them. I'll probably be giving some other videos regarding this event, as the coming weeks come on. But this is going to be the full card breakdown and predictions video. Pretty excited for this card, man. I mean, the two fights at the top of the card are incredible. There's a lot of great fights stacked in between. But the first fight of the night here, Sam Alvey taking on Ryan Spann. This is going to be a light heavyweight fight. They were scheduled to fight on the April 18th card. So these guys have been training. They're probably going to be, in relatively good shape. Spann, he was scheduled to fight on March 21st as well versus Paul Craig. But that fight obviously got canceled. He should be, like I said, ready to go here. He's been on fire. He's undefeated in the UFC. He has back-to-back finishes. Definitely is consistently improving and getting better as the years goes on. On the feet, he's still pretty basic, I would say, but he's long, he's fast, he's a powerful athlete. He does have an 81.5-inch reach, and he uses it really well. That's a very, very huge asset for him in his fights. He's good at walking opponents down. He'll control the distance with the jab, pull counter, stay at his range very well. He really likes to throw the 1-2 combination. Really has a heavy straight right hand in the pocket. Spann definitely has fast hands as well. He'll throw some nice hooks, uppercuts. He can get a little bit crazy inside. He could throw a little wild. His counter left hook is pretty nice though. In his match with Nogueira, he landed that counter left hook. His hand speed was just too much, man. He clipped Nogueira many times, finished him. And he rocked Devin Clark, had him looking pretty scared to throw back at him for the majority of the fight. And he eventually finished him with the guillotine. He showed some good finishing instincts in that one. He had a pretty nice uppercut when he fought Nogueira that finished off that fight. He's definitely flashed power, But Ryan Spann's grappling is the best part of his game. He doesn't have the greatest wrestling, but his wrestling is improving, and he was able to take down Nogueira. He quickly locked in an arm triangle as well. He was pretty close on it, and he's pretty good on top. He has strong ground and pound, but the most dangerous aspect of his game, his whole game, striking on the ground, in my opinion, is definitely his guillotine. It really is nasty, man. He could snap it on really quickly, snatch it up. He uses it very well to negate takedowns. He'll catch it in scrambles. You always have to be wary of it, man, and you're, if you put your head in the wrong spot, he's going to take it home with him. So, his defensive wrestling is a bit questionable. He was taken down fairly easily when he fought Luis Henrique. And off his back, he does look improved. When he fought Henrique, he was controlled rather easily. But he showed good get-ups when he fought Devin Clark. In this fight, obviously, with Sam Alvey, I don't envision him having to, defend that much of a wrestling-heavy game. But Sam Alvey, he's going to be making the switch. He was also supposed to fight on March 28th, but now with that card being scrapped, obviously he's fighting here, and he's lost three consecutive fights, so he's likely fighting for his UFC career here, and he definitely is going to have a lot to fight for, but he fights similarly in almost every fight. He likes to play the counter game, look for a one-punch knockout. He is a southpaw, and he definitely has power. His two major weapons are his right hook and his left hand. And he's added a couple things to his arsenal. He has started to use low kicks a little more, trying to use his jab a little more. But he just doesn't throw much volume in, and he allows his opponents to lead the dance a lot. He'll go backwards for entire fights if you pressure him. He does like to use flurries late in rounds to try to steal the rounds. He did that very effectively versus John Volante. And when he hurts an opponent, he will swarm, throw the kitchen sink. He's a finisher. And he's always been very durable. He eats shots to give shots. He's dangerous in exchanges. But recently, he's been getting hurt more. I would say he's had some early stoppage losses go against him. But, he hasn't been showing the greatest chin or as good of a chin as he had in the past in recent fights. Overall, Alvey has 19 knockout wins. He's only been knocked out three times. But two of his last three fights have been finishes due to strikes. But Sam is very good defensively as a grappler. Strong takedown defense, good get-ups. He uses the cage to get back to his feet very well, and he will attack with front chokes of his own. We saw that against Eric Spicely. He caught a front choke submission. If he does get taken down, he doesn't settle. He'll try to get up immediately. In his last match, he got taken down by a black belt, and he got his back taken, but he was able to turn in and control Brayu and his guard for a minute or so, and he showed good grappling there. He doesn't go for takedowns himself very often, which I think is a mistake. In 18 UFC fights, Avi has one takedown, so he's just not very dangerous with that. He only has three career submissions as well, so isn't dangerous with that much either. He has been submitted just one time, so to finish this guy is pretty hard. Avi has okay cardio, but doesn't throw enough volume to even warrant him getting tired, and he has shown gassing in the past, but a lot of those fights were at 185. Avi, you know, he has to show more aggressiveness here, bottom line. He can't allow himself to get walked down and pushed towards the cage. You know, his job is likely on the line. He needs to fight like it, but to be honest, man, Ryan Spann's last two performances have been pretty impressive. He's shown very fast hand speed, power, killer instinct. He did, show a flaw, getting a little bit sloppy going for the finish against Devin Clark that he's done in the past as well. He gets a little bit sloppy when he hurts guys, and he ate some big shots in return from Clark, but eventually locked that guillotine in, finished the fight. I just feel here that Alvi will likely get backed up. Spann will be able to control distance with his long-range strikes, with his 1-2s, with his speed. And he hits very hard. I could see him hurting Sam. Sam does have the chance to land a shot and put him out if he exits tall or he's sloppy in an exchange. But I think you have to pick Ryan Spann here. I mean, I hope Sam Alvi can go out there and get it done, but my pick is going to be Ryan Spann. And coming up next year, man, we have an awesome fight. Bryce Mitchell taking on Charles Rosa. This is one of the sleeper fights on the card. And Bryce Mitchell, man, he's done well for himself so far in his UFC career. You know, he has a fun personality out of the cage, an entertaining fight style. Caught a twister in his last match. His grappling has looked really good lately. And he's a striker, but I would say striking sometimes can look a little average. He doesn't really have great hands, so relies heavily on kicks, stance switching, being tricky. He will throw a lot of front leg side kicks, body head, and he's developed a good straight down the middle. He did sit down Bobby Moffitt with that shot. And Mitchell, he doesn't really throw hands, though. He will trade hooks in the pocket. He has a decent uppercut. He has that straight, like I just said, but he's just sloppy in exchanges. He looks uncomfortable at times. Doesn't hit the hardest either, so he can be outgunned. And especially in firefights, it seems like he just doesn't have the power to make his opponent respect him 100%. The thing is, though, Mitchell has been steadily getting bigger, putting on more weight, which I do think maybe will help him with the power a little bit. Mitchell, you know, he's just not a guy that's going to knock you out, though. When he struggles to get fights to the ground, you definitely start to see his opponents walk him down, get confident. He struggles with forward pressure. He does have a lot of heart. He has a strong chin. He's never been finished by strikes, but he's also never finished anyone with strikes. So Mitchell, you know, not a guy that's out there trying to knock you out. But his grappling, that's his thing, man. He's a very dangerous grappler. He's improved his wrestling, but the jiu-jitsu aspect is really where he shines through. Good job of, you know, timing singles, doubles, especially if his opponents are near the cage. He's also good at getting his hands connected, dumping opponents, and in top position, very aggressive. He loves to take the back. In his last match, he was passing very well. He was mounting like butter. He landed some heavy shots there, showed great riding ability. He was transitioning to dangerous positions and eventually caught a twister, man. So once Mitchell does take the back, you know, he's very dangerous. He'll attack with the rear naked choke. He'll attack with arm bars. He'll try to get that crucifix position. It seems like everywhere when he can get a, you know, finishing spot, he's going for it. And he's going with, you know, a variety of different submissions. He's definitely, you know, worked his game on the ground to be very dangerous. But his takedown defense, you know, is not the best. He almost welcomes being on his back. And he will attack Kimuras to counter takedowns, but hasn't been very effective with that in the UFC. Mitchell will, you know, attack off his back. You can see that 10th planet influence. He'll use the rubber guard. Good triangle. Very flexible legs. He can create armbar triangle opportunities. And he's very good at attacking with elbows as well from inside his guard. He also has a nice half-guard sweep. He's also very good at creating scrambles. But against high-level wrestlers with good top pressure, good riding ability, I think he's going to struggle. He has gotten held down in fights. We've seen that against Brad Katona, Tyler Diamond. And when he gets controlled on his back, he tends to get very tired. Mitchell, you know, he tends to give his back to stand up as well. Katona was able to catch him in a rear naked choke. And Mitchell's a guy who fades. You know, 8 of his 9 submissions have happened in the first round. He is 4-0 in decisions, but both his decisions in the UFC have been very close. His cardio is definitely not as good as Rosa's. In the third round, I think Rosa's going to try to put him on him if he's still there. And Mitchell's going to go out there, you know, hard, try to take Rosa out in that first round, I think. But Charles Rosa, you know, he's looking to play spoiler as a big underdog once again here. He was able to foil the plans of Manny Bermudez. He was a sizable underdog in that fight. And there was a bit of controversy there. He did hold the cage while he had the armbar locked in. Either way, you know, Rosa got the first round submission, and he has another big opportunity here. And Rosa, he had a large portion of his career stagnate due to injuries. He needs to get going here. You know, he is a karate striker, wide stance. He moves in and out. He's always switching stances, giving different looks, and he has nice kicks, you know, inside-outside low kicks, oblique kicks. He'll throw outside low kicks to round kicks to the body, along with the front side or front leg side kicks to the body. Good 1-2s, nice straight left, straight right. He'll switch stances, and he's very fast closing the distance. He'll throw a nice left hook overhand right combination, but he can get wild with his punches. He can duck his head, and he can enter range with his hands down. He can wing a little bit with his overhands, with his hooks. You know, he's a little bit susceptible to counters, but he has some nice spinning kicks, both to the body, to the head, jumping roundhouse kicks, spinning back fist. And he's good when he's going backwards, using movement, controlling distance. And if fighters can cut him off, though, force him to box or catch him with counters as he enters, he kind of can look a little bit ordinary. But he doesn't have the best boxing in close range. He can get very wild, hittable. So he needs to kind of keep this fight on the outside. Kind of these guys are similar on the feet. You know, Shane Burgos did struggle early on with the movement. But eventually he was able to land some shots and take him out. And Rosa, you know, he just gets caught in exchanges. He gets hit with a lot of punches. But he definitely is very tough. He has a great chin. The one time he's been finished in his career, he was still standing up, and he protested immediately. And he has two KO TKOs. He just isn't a big power striker. And but Rosa's good at defending. You know, he's very good at defending submissions. He also, you know, has decent wrestling as well. Like, if he takes you down inside your guard, he's good at defending the triangles, passing the legs, getting to that wrestling ride position. His top control isn't the greatest. You know, fighters have been able to scramble on bottom against him. But he's relentless with his wrestling in certain fights. I mean, he'll go for multiple takedowns in a round. He'll continue to doggedly try to get him. He does do a good job of catching front chokes and scrambles. A lot of different front chokes, guillotines, anacondas, darces, Peruvian neckties. And it makes it dangerous to shoot in on him. And he can also, you know, catch things off his back, which we saw in his last fight. You know, he's very good with leg locks. He has nice sweeps, good arm bars, good triangles. And he's never been submitted in his career. He's also going to be the bigger guy here. He's competed as high as welterweight before. And one of Rosa's biggest assets are just his will and his cardio, man. He's willing to push through fatigue. Usually wins that third round against everyone he fights. And in this fight, I think he needs to go forward, put your wrestling, heavy, grinding pace. Be aware of the submissions, but just try to dog Mitchell out. And this is an interesting fight because there are paths to victory for Rosa. He can't get the submission. He has shown he's good off his back and in scrambles. And Mitchell's given the back in the past, you know. Rosa, you know, his striking is awkward. I think he'll probably be the better striker here. But Bryce is younger. He's improving every fight. I think he has the better wrestling. And if he can get the takedowns, I don't think Rosa will be able to get a submission from bottom again, most likely. Mitchell has a strong top game, good passing ability, good riding. He's going on a wave of momentum right now. And I think he just could get takedowns and kind of dominate by riding out Rosa or even getting a submission or TKO with ground and pound. The third round could get a little bit dicey if it gets there. But, you know, my pick is going to be Thug Nasty Bryce Mitchell. Up next, we have another awesome fight. It's a rematch. It's Vicente Luque taking on Nico Price. And these guys fought a couple years ago. Vicente Luque kind of got a dominant victory. But, you know, a lot of things have changed. And Luque definitely needs to bounce back here. He had a rough outing in his last fight. He got dominated. He got beat up very badly by Stephen Thompson. Luque is now going to be taking a step down in competition. He's facing an opponent he's finished before. And he's taken a lot of damage, though, since that fight. He's had absolute wars with guys like Wonderboy, Perry, Brian Barberina. And for Nico Price, he's getting a big opportunity here. He's looking to avenge a loss. He's facing Luque for a second time. And he was dominated in the first fight. He got hurt on the feet. Then he got submitted. But Nico's done some good work since then. He's been trading wins and losses. But he just is coming off a highlight reel KO against James Vick. Seems like whenever this guy gets the victory, it's a highlight reel KO. And with this matchup, you know, when I look at their first fight in 2017, both of their recent fights, I just don't see many differences. Luque still walks opponents down. He has that tight high guard, heavy low kicks, nice straight punch combos, knees, finishing instincts. Nico Price, to me, hasn't really changed at all. He's still the same wild, unrefined guy. He relies on his toughness and really relies on his opponents making a mistake. In the first matchup, you know, Price had his jab shut down by the low kicks of Luque. He, you know, got walked down. He really didn't mount much offense there. And Price, he was aware of the counters, the straight punches when he opened up, so he really didn't want to throw a lot of volume. Luque was just very confident walking him down, was controlling the action against the cage. He was opening up with combos, and he had a ton of success with the straight punches. Price has always been very susceptible to straight punches, even throughout all his career. And he just stands a little tall. There's just always that chance with Price, though, that he can catch you with that KO. But that would require Luque to make a mistake, in my opinion. Luque is the better striker. He's a better grappler. I think he has more composure. He should win this fight. I don't expect this fight to go to the ground, most likely, unless Price panic wrestles when he's hurt. Price off his back really isn't great technically to me, but he's always looking to land that opening and finish the fight. I mean, he has two finishes off of his back in the UFC, but against a really good jiu-jitsu guy like Luque, I just don't think that's where he wants to be. Nothing from their first fight or their fight since have just made me think Price should win. I think Luque is going to finish him again here. I mean, I just don't see why people would pick Nico Price in this second fight. I don't think their styles have changed at all, and I think Luque is still a bad matchup for Price, and due to that, I got to go with Vicente Luque here. Up next here, man, yeah, this is a prelim. We got another sick fight. Jacare Souza taking on Uriah Hall, and Jacare, I mean, he's in search of answers. He's had back-to-back losses. He's been switching divisions, and he's making the move back down to middleweight. He had a split decision loss to Jan Blachowicz at light heavyweight his last time out. And he's getting up there. He needs to prove he still has it. He's 40 years old. A lot of people feel he doesn't have it anymore. And if Jacare can't beat a guy like Uriah Hall, man, it may be time for him to call it a career. But Uriah Hall, he's had a bit of a career resurgence, I would say, since moving to Fortis. He's won back-to-back fights. He is coming off one of the biggest wins of his career in Antonio Carlos Jr. And Hall's issues throughout his career have always been mental, man. He can't seem to put it all together on game day. This is his final opportunity to make a run, salvage the potential he once had. I mean, he's not young anymore, man. He's almost 36 years old. And now that he's with a great coach, he's with a good camp, this should be his best chance to do that. But, man, I mean, now with not having, you know, the ability to train the same way that he usually did, the same regimented way that Fortis likes to do, that could all be thrown out the window here. If Uriah Hall can't get this win, though, over a guy like Jacare, that will, you know, move him into a completely different class of fighter. That'll move him into a guy that actually has to be, you know, thought about in terms of someone that could potentially contend and be an interesting guy for the top level guys. And this is a very interesting fight. A couple years ago, it'd be Jacare all day. But man, it's a new day. You know, it's a new time. Uriah Hall's coming off beating another elite jiu-jitsu guy. He survived some bad positions versus Antonio Carlos Jr. And, you know, he must be feeling confident, but ACJ doesn't have the power striking of a guy like Jacare. Hall, you know, he's going to have a major reach and speed advantage. In his last match, he did a good job fighting, very disciplined. He worked behind the jab, the left hook, straight punches. He has a sick jab, man. Really good 1-2. Really puts power into his punches, and he broke Antonio Carlos Jr.'s nose badly, which was a huge factor in the fight. And obviously, he's dynamic with good movement, kicks. He can close the show with one punch, one kick, one knee. And he's still a very dangerous fight for anyone, man. He still gets backed up and can just explode on you and finish you. There's a lot of times where he's being dominated. He comes back, gets the win. But he still, you know, can be clipped with shots over the top. If I'm Hall, you know, the game plan is simple. Try to pressure behind feints. Use the jab. Keep the fight in the center. Use lateral footwork. Don't let Jacare land. Don't let him get inside or get a hold of you. And I feel if he doesn't get Jacare out of there early, I think Jacare, I mean, a lot of people talk about Jacare's cardio, but I think Jacare is going to start going body head. I think he's going to start landing the hooks like he does. I think he's going to come over the top with the overhands, start looking for takedowns. I don't see Hall having that same takedown defense or strength in a clinch that Jan did. And Jacare, you know, he showed improved head movement. And when he gets inside, he throws with bad intentions. He's also willing to eat punches to get inside, and I feel he's just much tougher than Hall. Jacare, you know, he's been finished a couple times by strikes, but he has a great chin. To me, Hall is more chinny than Jacare, and in a lot of fights, Hall takes a beating before he comes back. And this fight, man, if he lets Jacare hurt him or lets him rock him, I think Jacare is going to end him, man. I also think Jacare is just much more high level on the mat than Uriah. Uriah did do a good job defending the rear naked choke against Antonio Carlos Jr., but Jacare's top game is just much more vicious and dangerous than Carlos Jr.'s, in my opinion. I'm just not ready to pick Hall over Jacare. If he beats him, Jacare may be done, but I'm picking Jacare, and I think he could knock out Uriah, or I think he could submit him. So I'm picking Jacare inside the distance here. Up next here, you know, we got one of the, this is a good fight, name value-wise, I guess, but I would say it's one of the more, you know, boring fights on the card, but Carla Esparza, you got to respect her. She's still hanging around near the top of the strawweight division. I mean, she's been here since the beginning. She's won back-to-back fights. She's beaten up-and-comers like Cynthia Calvillo, Alexa Grasso. She beat Janda Roba. And she's improved a lot since dropping the belt. She's had a stellar career, man. And she's faced another longtime staple of women's MMA and Michelle Waterson. Michelle, you know, she was on the best run of her career. She had that four-fight winning streak snapped against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She was beaten down, but she performed valiantly. You know, she had some good positions. She took the back a couple times. She landed a couple head kicks, but just was overmatched. She's getting a totally different matchup here with Carla Esparza. And to me, this is a weird fight. He has close decision written all over it. Both girls are kind of bad matchups for each other. Waterson, you know, she's shown good grappling, but stronger fighters like Felice Herrig were able to control her against the cage and on the ground when she took her down. If Esparza is able to get takedowns like she usually does, I think she won't have much issue holding down Waterson. I don't think Waterson will get beat up on bottom, and I'm not even sure if Carla will be able to pass her guard, but I just don't see Michelle getting up often enough. On, you know, on the contrary, on the feet, Esparza, she relies a lot of on opponents coming to her, where she could throw some punches, shoot in, or shoot in off of a kick. In this fight, Michelle, you know, she has very good footwork. She's tight with her striking, evasive striking. I feel it'll be a lot harder to catch and take down Waterson off that front leg side kick than against most girls. But both girls, they don't have great hands. I would say Michelle's a little bit quicker. I think that has split decision written all over it. Man, I really don't want to spend much time on this fight. I don't really have a great read on it. I'm going to pick Carla Esparza by decision. Up next here, man, we got another super interesting fight. We got Fabricio Werdum taking on Alexei Oleinik, grappler's delight here. And Verdum, he's finally making his return. He's been off 2+ years with that USADA suspension. And he's entrenched, you know, as a massive favorite here, which is pretty interesting because he's 42 years old now, but he is facing a fellow 42-year-old submission artist in Alexei Oleinik. This is a good test for Werdum. If he has to win, he can get a step up to see if he can compete for the belt again. If he loses, well, you know, that would not be very good. But Werdum, he's coming off a very bad performance where he was knocked out stiff by Alexander Volkov. And Alexei Oleinik, he earned yet another submission victory in his last match. He was the underdog as usual, but he really dominated Morris Green before getting the finish. And Oleinik, you know, he's actually performed well against these legend heavyweights. You know, he was able to defeat Mirko Krokop. He defeated Mark Hunt. He did lose to Overeem, but he had some early success in that fight. And this is another chance for him to get a marquee win on his ledger. He's been asking for this fight for a long time, so I imagine he likes the matchup. He's going to be ready to go. First off, I just want to say, man, Alexei Oleinik, he's a fucking gangster, man. He's had some awesome fights in the UFC. Sick first shot knockout of Jared Roshaw. Went to war with Travis Brown, Curtis Blades, Overeem. He Ezekiel choked a couple guys. He's just a dangerous dude. His striking, you know, isn't the most technical, but it's very awkward, and he can knock you out. He plods forward, but can be very square. He loads up on a lot of shots, but he's super durable, and he throws hammers. Solid low kicks also, but really his shots that are dangerous are his overhands, his hooks. He'll throw these casting hooks, very heavy overhands, nice uppercuts, and he actually slips pretty well. He can avoid a lot of punches, good forward pressure. Nice clinch striking. He'll attack heavy to the body, to the head with the uppercuts and the clinch. He has a great chin also, man. He can eat bombs. He'll continue to come forward and just make it a sloppy war. He's good at surviving when he gets hurt as well. He usually gets TKO'd just from getting tired, you know. But he puts a crazy pace for a heavyweight. So does Werdum, so it's going to be interesting. You know, I feel he could maybe clip Werdum if they just brawl. I think that's going to be his best chance of winning if it stays on the feet, but Verdum has good striking. He covers up a lot, though. He doesn't move his feet, and he could be open at times. You know, he can open up, be susceptible to counters. We saw that against Stipe. He's also going to be older, a little bit slower. I would say his chin, you know, hasn't been great his whole career. So I do feel Verdum has the wider arsenal of strikes. He'll throw jumping attacks, spins. Probably has the better boxing. Definitely has the better kicks, but he struggles with forward pressure. I could see him getting tagged over, you know, a little bit over or around his guard. If he decides to strike or get in a sloppy trade, I think it could be, you know, to Alexei's advantage potentially. I think Alexei has more KO power. In the grappling realm, I just don't see Olenek being able to take down Verdum. And he's also very easy to take down himself. He does have a decent ability to get takedowns in the clinch, Olenek. He'll circle to the back, pull you down. But I just don't see him doing that to Fabricio. And he comes in square, doesn't have good takedown defense, like I said. He almost invites you to take him down. In the clinch, he will you know, look to lock up the Ezekiel and pull you to the ground, pull guard, which he did do that successfully versus Junior Albini. If you don't know what he's doing, he can catch you with it. But against a guy like Verdum, you know, that isn't going to happen. I feel the easiest path to victory for Verdum is really to work the single leg, just controlling half guard or side control. Alexei does have a decent guard. He could throw up triangles, he'll sweep. He has kind of does unorthodox things with his leg, like squeezing the body. But he's gotten his guard pass from going for triangles pretty easily. Alexei's definitely more of a top game player, and that's why I think Fabricio may be able to just control and dominate him from top position. Most of Olenek's subs, you know, are Ezekiel's neck cranks, rear nakeds. If Olenek is able to use his guard to stand back up or defend the takedowns and make Verdum tired, he has a chance, but to be honest, I think Verdum will be able to take him down easily. I think when he feels pressured, when he's in danger, he's just going to hit that single. And Verdum is a beast in top position, man. He's excellent at getting the back. He'll attack arm bars, rear naked. He's also very good off of his back and his guard. He'll attack arm bars, triangles. And it's a bit of a crapshoot because Verdum is older. He hasn't been active, but I'm sticking with him. I think he's going to win via submission in round two or TKO. I also could see him maybe landing a knee, a flying knee, a step-in knee. And this fight could be very sloppy if both guys get tired. And looking at the money line, I definitely feel it's dog or pass. But my pick is going to be Fabricio Verdum to get it done here. And we're coming up here on the last prelim. And shit, man, what a crazy rematch this is, right? Donald Cerrone taking on Anthony Pettis. Two old war horses. And you know, in the first fight, Pettis, he dusted Cerrone very quickly. But you know, this isn't the first fight anymore, and it's going to be at 170 pounds. So you know, both guys have seen their better days. They're riding losing streaks. The loser's going to be in a very tough position. So this is still an important fight for both guys. Cerrone, you know, he's lost three in a row, but when you look at who he's lost to the two guys in the main event, Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje, and Conor McGregor. So, I mean, no shame in that. And Pettis has faced, you know, pretty good level opposition, but, you know, guys like Carlos Diego Ferreira, Nate Diaz, I don't think you could put them at the level of a Gaethje, a Tony, or a Conor McGregor. And Cerrone, you know, he's coming off the heels, though, of one of the most disappointing performances of his career. You know, man, he went in there against Cowboy. Everyone knows what happened. He got dominated, didn't even land a single strike. And, you know, that sucks for Cowboy, a longtime guy. But if you ask me, you know, he has to be fired up off that. And if you ask me, Donald Cerrone has more fire left than Pettis. That doesn't mean you'll win the fight. But in the first matchup, you know, Pettis really dominated when he switched to southpaw. Cerrone, you know, he's always notoriously struggled with southpaws. And it was no different that night. You know, Pettis, he was successful with the right hook, with the straight left. But the left kick, you know, closed the show. He landed two heavy liver kicks, finished him off within 2.5 minutes. And if you watch that fight, man, Pettis, he's so much faster. He's lighter on his feet than nowadays, man. He was in superb shape back then. And at 170, man, he's chunky. He's a little slow. And he's not as dynamic either. Cerrone, to me, has maintained his physical level better. Both guys have taken a lot of damage, you know, in terms of, like, head damage, body damage. But with this fight, I do feel Cowboy has a better chance with Pettis being slower and older to get the win back. He needs to pressure, try to back Pettis towards the cage. He can't get clipped with the counters. And if Cerrone can get in the clinch or in on a double, he should be able to take Pettis down, man. He's the bigger guy, physically stronger. He's definitely the better wrestler. If Cerrone can just follow the game plan of grappling, I would be inclined to pick him all day here, but it's just tough to know what Cowboy wants to do because he may just go in there and try to, you know, strike with Pettis. Pettis is still powerful. He's still dangerous. He has a nice lead hook from both stances, quick overhands, good straight punches. His kicks, you know, haven't been used as much lately, but I would say he needs to bring them back here. His low kicks are always there. I imagine he's going to be a southpaw in here, try to walk Cerrone into, you know, offense, those head kicks, the body kicks, the straight left, the right hook. We saw in Cerrone's last fight, he got caught with the head kick versus southpaw. Pettis fades quickly now, though, if you pressure him especially. He's still dangerous in the early rounds, really in round one, but he just can't sustain that pace. I'm actually going to pick Donald Cerrone here. I don't know why, but I just think he has a little more left. I think he's going to be able to dig deeper, maybe land some nice shots, get a couple takedowns, control against the fence. I'm going to say he takes a decision in a fun back-and-forth fight. I think both guys are going to bring it, but I think Cowboy's going to get a decision. Yeah, we're about to get into the main card, and it's Greg Hardy versus Jorgen Castro in the first fight. This is a heavyweight fight, and Greg Hardy, you know, he did suffer a second loss in the octagon in his last match. But, you know, it wasn't a bad loss. It was against Alexander Volkov, a top 10 opponent. It was in Russia. So I don't think it did much to, you know, lower his stock. But Greg Hardy, you know, great athlete, dangerous guy. You know, fast hand speed, good jab, good left hook, good low kicks. He'll throw round kicks to the body. He'll even mix in some high kicks. And he did land some decent leaping left hooks versus Volkov. He's shown that one-punch power in the past, but his defense on the feet is a little bit suspect at times. He can, you know, lean back with his chin high, and he's ate some big shots and kept coming, so he's shown a strong chin, but Jorgen definitely has power he has to respect. And Hardy isn't much of a grappler, but he did time like a nice double leg against Alexander Volkov. He had some control time against the cage in that fight, and shows that he's working on that grappling portion of his game. In this fight, I feel holding DeCastro against the cage, looking for a takedown or two, would be a good game plan. If you can get on top of DeCastro, he has a much bigger frame, and it could be trouble. Hardy, obviously, is a great athlete, fast hips, good balance, good base. If he gets on top of you and you don't really have a great bottom game, it's going to be hard for you to do much. I think he's going to be able to probably rain down some shots. In this fight, he's not going to have to worry about the takedown. And for Jorgen, he's looking to build off that wicked UFC debut, man. DeCastro, you know, he decapitated Justin Taffa. It was a knockout of the year candidate. And he's going to be looking to rekindle some of that magic here. But DeCastro, he's an odd guy. He really isn't that big. You know, earlier in his career, he did the whole weight cutting thing. He fought at 205. He fought even at 225. But just didn't look as fast or explosive, and now he's decided to go the other way. He's put on size. Even if it's a lot of belly fat, you know, he tipped the scales at 265 in his last match. That's the limit. And with the extra weight, DeCastro, you know, he's still able to move, and he's light on his feet. He has a distinct advantage because of that at heavyweight. DeCastro, you know, good movement, and he likes to walk opponents into shots, into low kicks. He has really nasty low kicks. He showed that on the Dana White Contender Series. He also has a really powerful right hook, a good straight. He'll walk opponents into an overhand right, left hook combination. In his last match, he caught his opponent, Justin Taffa, with a perfect right hook, put him to sleep. Definitely has one-punch power. He also has decent kicks, you know, a nice switch kick to the body, to the head. He'll even look for some flying knees. But, you know, in some fights, I just not been that impressed with his defense or his fight IQ. He can load up on shots. He can get countered. He doesn't defend kicks well, and he also can clinch or throw kicks after he hurts his opponent to the head. Just kind of doesn't have the best finishing instincts, it looked like. In his fight with Raz Hilton, I didn't really like how he looked at all. He definitely took a lot of damage in that fight, and he's definitely improving. This is a good test for him. You know, another athletic guy who's also much bigger than him. DeCastro, he does have four wins by KO in his five wins, and if he can knock out Greg Hardy, that would be a big statement here. Jorgen, you know, he isn't a grappler, but he is improving. You know, when he fought Alton Meeks, he was able to move, land. He landed, he got close to landing some flying knees. And when he was taken down, he showed good get-ups against the cage, which was an improvement from his previous fights. And his cardio is a question mark. He's only been out of round one two times. I know some people are high on Jorgen, but I don't know, man. I'm just not sold yet. He hasn't shown me much. He can, you know, like, he hasn't shown me he can compete with a long athlete. Jorgen, you know, he has success countering fighters coming in who are slow, who lack athleticism. Now he's taking on a big, fast guy
who doesn't need to get in Jorgen's range. If Hardy just plays smart, uses intelligent pressure, works behind that jab, feints, tries to get in, Jorgen is going to open up probably. He's going to load up. He's probably going to have success countering Jorgen. I've seen Jorgen rocked. I've seen him knocked out. And I'm gonna have to go with Greg Hardy here. And I think Greg Hardy probably will win via first round knockout. Up next here, we have a fun fight. Calvin Kattar, Jeremy Stephens. And this is an interesting match, right? Because obviously, Jeremy Stephens, he has his back against the wall here. He hasn't won in his last four fights. Three losses, one no contest. But the thing is, you know, against Yair and Zabit, who are, you know, super prospects in that division, he won the third round, and arguably if those fights would have been five rounds, he could have potentially won those fights. So he's kind of on the cusp. He's still hanging around. He's still showing that he's competitive, but he just hasn't been able to put these wins in the win column. And for Calvin Kattar, he's coming off that loss to Zabit as well, where it was a similar fight with, you know, Zabit winning the first two rounds fairly easily against Kattar, but the third round, Kattar coming on strong, trying to put it on him and take him out. And Kattar, you know, was putting a lot of damage on Zabit in that third round, just like Stevens was. So, you know, both these guys, they like to stay on the feet. Calvin Kattar, he's much more technical. Great jab, great 1-2, good check hooks. Just very fluid, throws very straight, fast punches. And Stevens, you know, he's notoriously hasn't had success against straight punches because he throws hooks, he throws wide, he throws overhands. And sometimes, you know, a straight punch just beats him to the punch. He gets hit. He doesn't see it coming. He gets wild. He opens up even more. And it's just, you know, he could start to get pinged up a little bit in certain fights. We definitely saw that when he fought Max Holloway. And he started to try to resort to a grappling game plan with holding him against the cage. But in this contest, I mean, he has implemented that leg kick in the past. And I feel like he needs to throw that leg kick right away to counter the jab to get Kattar to stop throwing that jab. I mean, we've seen Kattar in the past get beat up with jabs and low kicks against, like, Kanato Moicano. Yeah, it really bothered him. The low kicks really bothered him versus Zabit. But he's also gotten better at defending the low kicks, pulling his leg back. You can see that he's even throwing some low kicks of his own. So he's getting a little bit more aware of that as a counter from his opponents. But it's still always going to be there just with the way that his style is. You know, a heavy boxing game plan. And, you know, I just feel like most likely Kattar's going to be able to keep him at range, use those straight punches, out-finesse him, land big shots, and maybe even catch and hurt Stevens. But Stevens, man, I mean, that dude's a dog, and he's going to continue to come. And if he just has one moment where Kattar wants to trade with him, or he could land a flush shot, he could put Kattar out cold. So you can never count out Jeremy Stevens. He's one of these guys that he's a beast, man. I mean, he's one of these guys that kill or be killed. He's very hard to finish. And he goes out there every second of the fight, he's trying to take your head off. So you always have to be weary of a guy like that. But I'm going to go with Calvin Kattar, and I think he's probably going to win a decision. I just think that the line is a little bit off, and if anything, I would put a bet on Jeremy Stephens. But to me, the pick is going to be Calvin Kattar. Up next here, we have an awesome fight. Francis Ngannou, Jairzinho Rozenstruik. And, you know, Francis, he's been really winning this title shot for a while now. He's been defeating, you know, these legends of the sport, devastating the division, really. I mean, he whooped Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos, knocked him out very quickly. And early finishes, you know, they've been Ngannou's MO. Ngannou's last seven wins have been first round finishes. He usually struggles if he can't find that finish. I mean, he's 0-3 in decisions in his career. And for Jairzinho Rozenstruik, he's looking to deliver, you know, after receiving the fight he asked for in Francis Ngannou. I mean, not many people are calling out Francis. Jairzinho did it. He called a shot. He got it. And now with the win, he would likely be next in line for a title shot. I mean, probably jump everyone in the queue. And Rozenstruik, he's undefeated. He's coming off the biggest name victory of his career. He defeated Alistair Overeem. And that was in the dying seconds of the fight. I mean, he was losing almost the entirety of the fight prior to the finish. But that just shows that he could knock you out at any time. He busted his lip wide open. And he's very confident. He's a knockout artist. And most definitely cannot be taken lightly. He was also training at ATT for this fight. But in reality, I don't know how much help that's going to do this time, just due to the fact with the pandemic and everything. But he still, you know, is getting a good game plan, good coaches in the corner, probably even some good sparring partners, you know. And both these guys, they're counter fighters. Jairzinho, he's a more technical striker. He's faster. I would say better combos, kicks. And I think he's a little bit better with blitz combinations, better point score. And Francis, you know, he has a chance to get the KO, but if he doesn't early, I think Jairzinho is going to land some counters, low kicks, get Francis a little bit gun-shy. And we've seen Francis, you know, do this before versus guys like Derek Lewis. I think a lot of guys are nervous about the speed and the countering ability, obviously the power of Francis. And they'll throw wild or they'll try to crash the distance, get hurt, do something stupid. And Francis is a king at, you know, when you make a mistake, he makes you pay and takes you out for it, especially early. He's probably the most dangerous guy in the UFC. But Jairzinho, I don't think he's going to be scared to strike with this guy. I think he's going to be in his element. I think he's going to be very calm. And he's a seasoned striker with a ton of confidence. He can eat bombs. I mean, we saw that against Overeem. He was eating these shots, continue to come forward. And I just don't see him getting out of position like a JDS did, or losing composure and trying to close the distance hastily like a Kane or a Overeem did. Francis maybe could try to mix it up and grapple. That could change the game. The thing is that Francis doesn't do that. I just think Jairzinho is going to outstrike him and get a TKO or decision victory. So I think this could be a boring fight potentially, but my pick is going to be Jairzinho Rodensburg to get the upset here and, you know, turn a lot of heads here at UFC 249. Man, here we go, baby. These two fights, I'm pumped for this fight in the main event. Henry Cejudo, Dominic Cruz. This is a hell of a fight right here, man. Henry Cejudo, he's getting back in the cage. He did have some injuries, some bad luck, and he was originally, you know, scheduled to fight in Brazil against Aldo, but obviously that's all changed now. He's now fighting Dominic Cruz in Florida, and he is coming off a shoulder surgery. He hasn't fought in about a year. But he's been calling out the big names, the legends of the division, you know, and he's getting what he wants here. He's set to face who, in my opinion, is probably the best bantamweight of all time in Dominic Cruz. And defeating Cruz, even an older Cruz, is a huge feather in the cap for Cejudo. On the feet in this fight, I think Henry, he should look to, you know, attack the body, throw a lot of kicks. Henry has a very nice leg and body kick, and Dominic is very hard to hit to the head. He has some of the best footwork, head movement in MMA history. And along with that, he's a lot taller than Henry. I think Henry is really going to struggle to hit Cruz to the head unless he can back him up or starts really landing effectively to the body. Henry, I don't think he's going to have much success striking to the head. He does have an excellent jab. He took over the fight in his last match, walking his opponent down, throwing the straight, throwing the jab. And he landed that straight punch over and over on Rice. But Rice was very tired. He slowed down considerably. And Henry, though, he's very fast. He's dangerous closing the distance. Good hooks, he packs power inside especially, and if he can get Dom to trade or just time a right hook, he could definitely rock him. I think the only time Henry really should open up with combos is when he has Dom against or near the cage. You know, I don't think he should try to trade with him in space, like, or in the center. Henry, you know, he can bite to a lot of feints, and he gets a little bit flat-footed at times. That's something he can't do here. He can't get frustrated. He can't start to wing punches. He can't start to stand in front or get flat-footed, or he's going to get outclassed here. To me, Cruz, I mean, he's smoother on the feet. He has much better footwork. He doesn't load as much. He's clearly the better technical striker, but Henry has that dogginess. He has the power, and if he can continue to land body, you know, body kicks, low kicks, ultimately back up Cruz, he could maybe land a big shot. I mean, Cruz plays with his hands down, and Henry hits hard, so he could close the show. But everyone talks about Henry's gold medal, and he is an elite wrestler. I mean, his single, his double legs are absolutely sick. He has an excellent cradle, good front headlock, and he uses that to control a lot of opponents. When he fought Demetrius Johnson, he was able to control him on the mat inside of Johnson's full guard. And against Dom Cruz, though, I just don't see him being able to control Cruz on the mat, or vice versa, really. Both guys are such incredible scramblers. I just don't think Dom will be very worried about giving his back or being in a bad position to stand up, because Henry isn't a submission threat, and Cruz is the guy who's more dangerous in top position, in my opinion, especially if he could take the back. Henry has never earned a submission, and usually when he's taking you down, it's more about control, changing it up, just trying to win on points. I do think Henry should try to time takedowns and just get Dom thinking about him, but I just don't think he's going to be successful holding him down. If he can't successfully land a couple, then maybe he could start to feint the takedown, land shots over the top. In his last match, he did land some heavy elbows from half guard that finished Marlon Moraes off on the ground. And Cejudo's cardio, his will to win, is top notch. I mean, him and Cruz both have elite mental toughness. They won't quit in there. But Dom Cruz, man, he's back again, and he's trying to do the unthinkable twice. I mean, winning the belt after only having one fight in 5 years prior. And injuries have plagued Cruz's career, man, but when he gets in the cage, he's brilliant. You know, Cruz is extremely well-rounded. He's beaten the who's who of the division. He's largely dominated, and Cruz, you know, he's beaten the old guard with Uriah Faber, the new breed in TJ Dillashaw. He holds wins over Demetrius Johnson, two victories over Joseph Benavidez. I mean, both those guys have a win over Henry Cejudo, and he's going up against the odds here once again. I mean, hasn't fought in 3.5 years. He's 35 years old now. And it's going to be interesting to see how he can keep pulling this off or if he's going to look old. But, you know, if Cruz comes back and regains the belt, I mean, he cements his legacy as one of the greatest fighters of all time, regardless of weight class. When I hear people talking about this fight, man, all I hear about is, you know, oh, Dom Cruz is old. Dom's always injured. Why is he even coming back? I mean, the fact of the matter is, to me, is Cruz did this already. He came back. He got the belt from TJ. I think he's the best bantamweight of all time. He's clearly an incredible fighter. And, you know, obviously, he's still hungry, and he feels like he has something to prove. So that's why he's going to come back. He has unfinished business, I feel like, probably. I mean, I feel like maybe that loss to Cody didn't sit well in his head. But, you know, I have no problem with him coming back. I expect him to be ready to fucking go. And everyone wants to talk in hindsight about the Cody fight. But, man, I mean, that was an amazing version of Cody. You probably would smoke a lot of people in that division. Also, that was an undefeated Cody. Cody had all the confidence in the world. And for Cruz to take this fight short notice, you know, in this sort of pandemic, I have a feeling he will be ready to go. I think he's going to be in shape. I think he's going to show his 100%. Will it be enough? I mean, that's what we're going to have to find out. But I just don't like all the Cruz disrespect, man. The confidence on Henry is baffling to me, man. People must have forgot, man. Cruz, he's 13-1 at bantamweight. You know, 8 of his last 9 fights have been title fights. He's 8-1 in those fights. And Henry, I mean, he's 6-0 at bantamweight in his career. But when you look at it, he's only fought one legit bantamweight. He fought Marlon Moraes at 135. He fought TJ at 125 and TJ depleted himself completely. So, I mean, I just don't know how people can look at these two guys' careers and see Cejudo as an overwhelming favorite. I mean, even in Cruz's last match, he did lose for the first time in 8 years, but it was a sick fight. I mean, he was still able to win 2 rounds, and I think Cruz is going to do what Cruz does here. I think he's going to feint, you know, fake move. I see him throwing a lot of low kicks. I think he's going to try to walk Henry into punches, into kicks, you know, attack the uppercuts, the hooks, the overhands. And Cruz is just funky, man. I mean, he's hard to pin down. I think he's going to throw more volume than Henry. And Cruz walked down Cody in the last one. I think he should, you know, in this one, do both. You know, work forward, pressure, because I don't think Henry is very good fighting backwards. But also frustrate him, make him miss, make him pay. And Dom has amazing grappling skills himself, man. I mean, his double leg timing is unreal. And he's the only fighter in the UFC to take down TJ in his whole entire UFC career. And he took him down multiple times. Cruz is also sick in the clinch with trips, throws. He'll suplex opponents. I mean, we saw that when he fought Demetrius Johnson. And he can get takedown after takedown without gassing out. And Cruz also has sick takedown defense and scrambling ability. I just don't see either fighter being able to control each other. I could see both taking each other down, though. And Cruz, you know, in his last fight, he had sick cardio, man. He showed extreme toughness, recoverability. Man, I just don't see Cejudo being able to strike moving backwards like Cody. And he's likely going to have to press forward to have any success. And if Cruz starts walking him down, I think he's going to 100% have success here. Cruz has the better cardio, I think. He's never been finished by strikes. I think he's, you know, very hard to break mentally, almost impossible. And this is going to be an epic fight, man. I feel it's going to be a close war. I just see this being an amazing matchup. Henry's very dangerous in round one. He has 5 first-round TKOs. But Cruz is just so hard to hit. He's so durable. I just don't see him getting finished, especially early on. Cruz, you know, he only got submitted that one time when he was 21 at 145 against Uriah. Henry has no submissions. I see this most likely going to decision. And, man, you know what? I'm actually going to go with Dominic Cruz. I'm going to go with Dominic Cruz to win. It might even be a split decision, but I'm going to go with Dominic Cruz to get the victory here, regain the belt. And here we go, baby. I don't want to jump the gun here, but after all the craziness that's gone down, we still might get to see this fight. Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. I mean, on paper, man, when you look at this fight, I mean, this is one of the best fights of all time, man. I mean, both these guys are extremely violent. They go in there. They have, like, some of the best fights in UFC history. There's never been a boring Tony fight. There's never been a boring Justin Gaethje fight. They're going to put him in there. I mean, this is going to be fucking chaos, man. I mean, after all the craziness that's gone down, I mean, we're still going to see Tony Ferguson compete, I hope. And, you know, UFC resident wild man, you know, that's what, you know, people like to call him. And he's been, you know, the one constant throughout this whole saga. He's staying 100% committed, ready to go. I mean, he even went as far as making weight for this fight when it didn't even take place for April 18th. He's a machine, man. He's just on a mission right now. The interim lightweight title is on the line. He has the chance to become the first two-time interim champion in UFC history. And the guy that's going to be in his way is Justin Gaethje, man. He's getting a massive opportunity. He has the chance to end one of the best win streaks in the history of the UFC, take the interim belt. And Gaethje accepted this match for April 18th. So now he's had almost 6 full weeks to train, which, I mean, that's almost a full training camp. He has no excuses heading in here. He should be confident, ready to go. And man, when you look at this fight on paper, I mean, both these guys are coming off destroying dudes. I mean, Justin Gaethje, 3 knockouts in the first round, all in a row. Tony Ferguson, I mean, he came back after that gruesome injury that he had after the Kevin Lee fight. He's destroyed Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone, made both of them quit. And, you know, Justin, he did kind of get to feast on a little bit of Tony's, you know, after Tony beat down on Donald, broke his face. Justin was able to fight him shortly after that. So I definitely think, you know, Tony fought the better version there of Donald Cowboy Cerrone. But, you know, when you look at this fight, I mean, extremely fucking interesting, man. I mean, you see Justin Gaethje now. He's gotten much better with his footwork, a lot tighter with his punches. He doesn't throw as much. He used to throw a little bit wide and wild from too far out, and that's where he would get countered coming in. He'd get hit with straight punches. Now he's gotten a lot better at using his footwork to close the gap instead of throwing wide punches. And, you know, being in the pocket, he throws very tight, dangerous hooks, man. And that's where Tony has to be very careful, especially early in the fight, because Justin, man, he has crazy power. I mean, a different type of power where if Tony gets hit clean with one of these hooks, like real clean on the button, I mean, I don't know. I can't just see Tony getting knocked out like that. But man, I mean, Justin can put out anyone with one of those hooks, man. And he has the leg kicks as well that are going to be a big factor, I feel like, just solely because Tony likes to use a lot of movement. He spins a lot. His legs are going to be available, and if Justin can start to wear him down with the low kicks, then maybe, you know, he could get Tony more stationary, force him to brawl. It'd be more of a Justin Gaethje-type fight, and that's where Justin maybe could, you know, get a accumulation knockout, a couple knockdowns, and finally finish him off or something like that. But the thing with Tony, though, man, is just, fuck, I mean, once he starts to read your timing, he starts switching stances, he's rolling with all your shots, he's walking you down, it starts to become a different game, man. I mean, he really starts to just take over and just beat the shit out of guys. And you see that in a lot of fights. Like, you'll see Tony against Pettis, like, after a while, he's walking him down, he has him against the cage, he's going body, head, he's throwing low kicks, elbows, and he's just destroying him, man. He's putting it on these guys. In this fight, man, I just think he has to, you know, stay long, you know, long uppercut, straight punches, front kicks to the body, hard inside leg kicks, jabs. I mean, we've seen Justin really struggle with jabs. You know, he gets jabbed up a lot, and when you go body head on Justin, I mean, he has that thing where he likes to cover up, he likes to kind of, you know, use a shell and then wait for you to throw, kind of try to time you, catch a quick counter, real tight punch, and knock you out. But if you could start going body head, accumulating damage, I mean, he just starts to eat punches after punches. And man, I mean, everyone talks about Tony gets hit so much, but Tony, I mean, he's never been knocked out. He's never been hit almost 200 times in a fight. I mean, I believe when you're looking at Tony's record here in the UFC, he's only been hit over 100 times against RDA. That's the only fight he's ever been hit over 100 times. Justin Gaethje got hit like 177 times against Poirier, 155 or something when he fought Eddie Alvarez, and then when he fought MJ, it was like 101 or 97. So, I mean, he gets hit with a ton of punches himself, and man, I mean, Tony's cardio is just crazy, too. I mean, we see all the time, Justin Gaethje gets tired in fights, man. 8 minutes in, I mean, he's tired. He gets very tired, and you've seen that when he fought Poirier, when he fought Eddie Alvarez. If this fight gets out of the first round, I think it's going to be all bad for Justin, man. I think it's going to be, you know, avalanche. I think Tony's going to start really putting it on him bad. And I don't think Justin is the type of guy that's going to quit like a Pettis, like a Donald Cerrone. I think he's going to be taking the ass whooping, you know, straight up front like a man. And I think it's going to, you know, I think Tony might get him at the, you know, in the later rounds. Or I think it could be a decision where Tony wins 49-46, 48-47. I just think once Tony gets his rhythm in, gets that range, starts switching stances, going to the body, I think he throws straighter, better punches than Justin also. I mean, Justin, in the pocket, he's a lot better than Tony. If you think about it just like that, like if they're just going to trade punches or brawl, Justin's probably going to get him, man. Justin's probably going to knock him out. So Tony, he does have these times where he closes distance very hastily, and he has to be very weary, especially early in the fight. He has to be very respectful of the power of Justin, man. He can't just close the distance and act like he's like a Superman, even though, you know, I feel like up to now in his career, he's had that ability to take shots, go to his back. I mean, his recoverability is crazy, and he just knows how to get in certain positions where he knows he's safe. He'll go to the Imanari roll, he'll go into his guard, and he knows that he can, you know, regain his cobwebs there. And man, I just don't see Tony losing, man. I don't think Tony is going to lose to Justin Gaethje. I don't think it's going to happen, man. I'm going with Tony Ferguson. I think he's going to win fourth or fifth round stoppage TKO. But like I said, I could see it being a decision. I see a ton of guys, man. They all are on Justin Gaethje, man. Man, I don't see it, man. I think Ferg's going to go out there. I think he's going to put a whooping on this boy, dude. So we're going to see what happens, but I'm sticking with Tony Ferguson, man. I mean, I'm sticking with Tony Ferguson here.